W.E.B. Du Bois was born in 1868, 5 years after the slaves in America were freed, and died on the eve of the March on Washington led by Martin Luther King. Du Bois devoted most of the 95 years of his life to the advancement of African Americans and Africans. Du Bois was the first African American to get a doctorate from Harvard, wrote what is considered the first book of urban sociology, co-founded the NAACP, and was a pioneer of Pan-Africanism. He also wrote one of the most important books in African American literature, The Souls of Black Folk. Written in 1903, it predicted that the major issue of the 20th century would be the color line. Tomorrow night, many PBS stations will show a documentary on Du Bois, directed by my guest Louis Messiah. He also worked on the Eyes on the Prize series and is a recipient of a MacArthur Fellowship, the so-called Genius Award. I asked Messiah what Du Bois meant to him before he started the film.
It's funny, I think my first memories of Du Bois came in the early 60s. I guess 6 or 7 or 5 or 6, somewhere in there. I remember hearing from my parents that Dr. Du Bois was moving to Ghana, or had moved to Ghana, which he did in 1961. And at that time, Nkrumah was the president of Ghana, was, you know, the first leader of an independent Ghana. And my father had known Nkrumah when he was at Lincoln, when Nkrumah was at Lincoln. My father was much older than Nkrumah.
Lincoln University.
Lincoln University outside of Philadelphia. And Nkrumah had sort of put a call out for black folks from around the world in the diaspora to come to help build the Ghanaian nation. And so my father had said, look, you know, here's Du Bois at age, you know, 93, moving to Ghana, you know, to sort of do this work on an Encyclopedia Africana. You know, maybe I should go as an engineer and contractor and see if I could do some work. But my mother had 3 kids at that time and really sort of hesitated to sort of uproot and move to Africa. But that was the first sort of memory I have of Du Bois. But certainly growing up, you know, Du Bois was a reference point in school. I remember reading from Souls of Black Folk. We had there was a parent at the school, Dr. Catherine Morgan, who used to bring in various writings. And I remember sort of having a discussion group on Souls of Black Folk.
Du Bois lived to 95. What are some of the parts of history that you cover just by covering him?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, for me, I mean, I grew up growing up in the 60s. You know, I have a clear notion of the 60s, you know, up until today. And in this country, as an African American, you know, there's an awareness of the time of enslavement, the time of captivity. But really, in that span of time, really the century between Reconstruction and the modern civil rights movement, that hasn't been an area that's been explored popularly. And so, looking at Du Bois, who really was active almost up until the day of his death in 1963, we have a way of looking at all the different strategies in the African-American freedom movement. So whether it's Pan-Africanism, socialism, integration, cooperative economics, Du Bois at some point in his life is sort of looking at them. Also, there are also paths that he didn't choose, that you see him as a force of opposition. I mean, in terms of nationalism, Du Bois was not a nationalist. He opposed Marcus Garvey. So by looking at him, we get to look at not only his past, but some of the other paths that we've had.
Because he lived so long, to 95, he had time to rethink certain views, and he changed his mind about a few things. What are some of the things he changed his mind about, and how did that complicate things for you doing a biographical film about him?
Well, I think it makes it much more interesting, and it also shows his intelligence in a lot of ways. I mean, as the context of the times change, because things do change over a century, which is, you know, he lived nearly a century, a thinking person reacts to that. So where early in his life, you know, he works strictly for integration, by the time of the 30s, he's beginning to see that this forced system of segregation might be something, is not something to be thrown away. I mean, not that he was for segregation, but saying that it was important for the black community to develop their economy, to develop institutions within the economy, and not to abandon them. The talented tenth notion, he writes an essay in 1903 about the talented tenth, this notion that the few people, the few percentage of African Americans who had gained an education, had gained some sort of responsibility to the broader mass, the 90% that didn't have educational access, that were not, you know, lawyers, teachers, doctors, or whatever. By the 40s, he does another essay. He actually gives a speech to a group of African-American men, the Boulé, and he sort of makes some slight revisions in that and tries to clarify it, because it seems at that point that the talented tenth is an elitist notion, which doesn't really hold that well in the 40s.
Du Bois joined the Communist Party in 1961, and that, I think, really changed the way a lot of people saw him, because he entered into what some people perceived as enemy territory. How do you think that his joining the Communist Party affected his reputation?
I would say even before his joining the Communist Party, in 1951, Dr. Du Bois was indicted for his work with what was then called the Peace Information Center, that was circulating something called the Stockholm Peace Petition. Now, 1951, we're in the middle of the Korean War. You know, the Cold War is really, you know, at its one of its first heights. And the notion of people in the Justice Department was that if you advocated peace, you were therefore anti-American. So many people involved in the peace movement, and the peace movement included a wide array of people from church groups to, you know, women's groups, as well as to political groups. The Communist Party was involved in the peace movement at that time. So the indictment of Du Bois sort of took him away from the mainstream and the popular discourse. I would say up until 1950, without question, Du Bois was one of the best known African Americans. I would say maybe Paul Robeson and Louis Armstrong might be there. But after 51, you see his speaking engagements drying up. Du Bois relied heavily on speaking at colleges and universities, but many of these black colleges and universities were supported by state government and federal government. Major publishers, Du Bois had published 37 works over his life. Major publishers refused to publish him. His granddaughter in the film says he became persona non grata, and his books were literally taken out of libraries during that time. So as a result of that, we lose him from the popular discourse, and what we have is it leaves this hole in American history.
I think W.E.B. Du Bois is better known now to intellectuals than he is as just like a popular figure in the way that, say, Martin Luther King is known as a popular figure.
I think that's true. I mean, among intellectuals, among activists, and among artists, particularly writers, African-American writers, Du Bois' legacy is quite strong, and he is referenced very, very often. Du Bois was not a street fighter. Du Bois did not lead street marches, although in 1917 he led an anti-lynching march in New York City, but that wasn't his work. He was an intellectual, and our society, for the most part, does not honor intellectuals, and an African-American intellectual is something that, because of the sort of, you know, innate, you know, sort of racism in a lot of what goes on, is something that is not normally put out there. I mean, and I think in the last, since the 60s, with, you know, the growth in black studies, you know, we have become more comfortable with the notion that there are African-American intellectuals who can comment and on a variety of different subjects. King and Malcolm X were intellectuals, but they were also were activists, and there also was footage of them in active sort of positions. That does affect a lot of the sort of popular influence.
Louis Messiah is my guest, and his new film is a biography of W.E.B. Du Bois, which will be shown on public television Friday night. There's some wonderful archival footage you have of Du Bois. What do you consider to be the prize in your archival footage?
Well, many things, I guess. In a lot of ways, making this film was really this treasure hunt, really trying to see if we could find images, photographic images, moving film footage images, as well as archival audio that would allow us to tell the story, actually the four stories in the film. And I think probably there was footage that I had gotten in Ghana. I had gone to a film festival in Burkina Faso, which is a country north of Ghana, and then traveled into Accra, and there went to the archives at Ghana. Du Bois lived the last 2 years of his life there, and there was able to find footage of his burial and some incidents in the last few years of his life. That was pretty spectacular for two reasons. One is, film really was not made for tropical climates. It was really made for the Northern Hemisphere. And one of the tragedies of that is that film archives in places where you don't have, you know, constant temperature control, where you have power failures and the air conditioning goes out, often deteriorates. The greater tragedy is that Nkrumah, when he became president of Ghana, realized the importance of film in terms of spreading really the change that was going on in Africa, and sent out camera crews to document major events happening all through Africa. So just about every single independence that occurred from 57 to, you know, the early 60s when Nkrumah was in power was documented by Ghanaian film crews. And a lot of that is deteriorated because the film is not stable. But fortunately, I found this strip of footage that had footage of Dr. Du Bois and the burial, and that meant a great deal to me.
Lou, you've lived in Philadelphia most of your life. You grew up here. You live here now. You've been gone for certain jobs and stuff in between. But one of Du Bois' famous studies was called The Philadelphia Negro. What did you learn about your home by reading that text?
Although the specifics have changed between 1896 and 1897, when Du Bois was working on The Philadelphia Negro, and now,
100 years later.
100 years later, yeah. It's interesting. Many of the issues, and some of the rationale that Du Bois had in making The Philadelphia Negro still persist. One of the reasons he was commissioned to write The Philadelphia Negro was, at that time, among certain sort of Philadelphia Brahmins, there was a sense that that there was criminality going on in poor neighborhoods and in black neighborhoods in particular. And the question was, did black people have some particular propensity to crime, which is not completely dissimilar to what people have suggested, some folks have on the right have suggested today. So Du Bois set out to do this study. In many ways, this is the beginning of urban sociology in the United States. That is, the process of not making sociological statements based on whim or opinion, but really doing hard empirical research. What Du Bois did was to interview thousands of people living in the 7th Ward, which is a very large tract in Philadelphia, each family, asking them about income, asking them about health, asking them about occupation, asking them about pastimes. And from that data, was able to see that if people don't have jobs, then there's a higher incidence of crime, there's a higher incidence of disease. When people do have jobs, it's less and less. So he was able to show direct correlations between sort of economic, you know, well-being and some of the negatives in society. So it was instructive in those ways.
Now that you have a chance to look back on a documentary that took you years to make, the film about W.E.B. Du Bois, what would you say is the hardest part of a biographical documentary?
I think the hardest part for me of a biographical documentary is being in the making of it, being aware that film is not the person. You know, in many ways, you know, 2 hours of viewing time is not the person, and not being confused by that, realizing that what we can best do, and when I say we, I'm talking about my collaborators on the project, Tulani Davis, Tony Cade Bambara, Miri Baraka, and Wesley Brown, what we can do is sort of give some sense of someone's life and some context to the life. I think that was the context of Du Bois's time that I found most interesting. In the film, I'm not, in all honesty, I'm not terribly interested in his relationship with his mother. Maybe that's a fault, but that to me is not as interesting as what's happening to the vast majority of African Americans, what's happening in America, what's happening in the world. That to me is the film that I'm interested in. And Du Bois allows a lens, because he's so active, he allows a lens to look at this century of history.
Louis Messiah's documentary on W.E.B. Du Bois will be shown tomorrow night on many PBS stations.